Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Artists First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You are tuning in to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. This show airs every Monday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For more information about the show and to listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/maxinethompson.htm. And don't forget to follow Artist First on Twitter. You can find us under the Twitter handle at @artist_first. And now here's your host of the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show, Dr. Maxine Thompson.
Good evening. Thank you for tuning in to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. I'm Dr. Maxine Thompson of MaxineThompsonBooks.com and MaxineThompson.com. I'm the author of novel The Ebony Tree, award-winning novel Hostage of Lies, L.A. Blues, and my upcoming novel L.A. Blues 2, Slipping into Darkness. I'm also the author of short story collection A Place Called Home, and also best-selling e-books, Never Knew Love Like This Before, All in the Family, contributor to that, and Secret Lovers, and Proverbs for the People. And I'm also the author of The Hush Hush Secrets of Writing Fiction That Sells, and The Hush Hush Secrets of Making Money as a Writer. All books are available nationwide and on Amazon.com and BarnesandNobles.com. Tonight's guest is first-time author Evie Adams. She's an ambitious Aquarius with a passion for creative writing. Her childhood dream had always been to become a full-time author, and Adams has been working on that best-selling novel ever since. With dedication and perseverance, her hard work finally paid off, and she landed a book deal with a major publisher. Now her debut novel, Darling Nikki, is being released through Simon & Schuster under Zane's imprint, Strayboar Books, on February 28, 2012, tomorrow. Good evening. How are you doing, Evie?
I'm great. How are you, Dr. Maxine Thompson?
Oh, I am fine. Well, please tell the audience a little bit more about yourself.
Well, I am 27. I stay in Jackson, Mississippi, and I am currently a journalism major and a freelance writer. Oh, and also, just to put it out there, I have two free books that I'm giving away. The first two people who email in to artistfirst.com will be able to receive those copies.
Okay, and they can email dj@artistfirst.com. Okay, well, Evie, please tell us about Darling Nikki. What is the book about?
Well, Darling Nikki is about a woman named Nikki who's married to a millionaire real estate tycoon and discovers that he has not only been cheating on her but has had a child on the side. She goes through a lot of different things throughout the book, I'd say within a year span, that include her son. He gets a young girl pregnant. The young girl moves in, and then she ends up finding out some dark secrets that lead her to want to seek revenge against some people in the book. So, it's basically about a woman who risks this life of luxury to seek revenge against somebody that she's really angry with.
That's interesting. Well, Darling Nikki was a song from the singer Prince's Purple Rain soundtrack. Is your book related to that song in any way?
Well, no, Prince. You know, I'm a big fan of Prince, and there are a few themes throughout the book. You know, the book has a lot of purple on the cover and throughout. Nikki, she drives a red Corvette, and she's a fan of Prince as well, but no, there are no direct ties to the song at all, no.
When you were writing, did you listen to any of Prince's records?
I did use that as a muse, I guess, to write the book.
Yeah, music is real important to writers. When you write, there are certain rhythms like iambic pentameter that you can pick up in the writing that have come from the music. And then sometimes, for different writers that have come on the show, they tell me that they listen to music because it helps with them seeing their book as a movie, and they can see hear the soundtrack, and it kind of inspires what will happen in the scene. If the movie or the music speeds up, then they know, oh, I got to write this scene fast. Or, this is a chase scene, or this is a, slow scene. So music is very important to writers. When did you first start writing?
I've always been writing since I was a little girl. It was my dream. I just knew one day that I was going to be an author. I wrote my first full-length book back when I was like 17, 18. But I tossed that to the side. Darling Nikki was something that I wrote probably about 4 or 5 years ago. And I just always knew that it was going to be the book that got my foot in the door. It took some time, but it finally happened.
Yeah, you're young. I didn't realize you were so young. 27, that's real young. A long time. You can write many, many books in your lifetime. Mm-hmm. Well, is Darling Nikki related to you, your life, or someone you know?
No. There were some things of my own life that inspired me to write the book, but it's purely fiction. Not one thing in this book has happened to me or anybody else that I know. It was like this project that I decided to use my imagination to take me wherever it would go. And it was pretty therapeutic, and I enjoyed the experience.
Okay. Well, would you read us an excerpt from the book, and I'd like you to set it up before you read it, and tell me what page it's on, too.
Okay. The excerpt that I'll be reading will come from Chapter 1. It'll be right there in the beginning. Of course, there's a prologue that foreshadows something that's going to happen. But in this scene, Nikki's husband discovers a death threat and is basically going over the list of possibilities as to who would want him dead. It starts on page 3 of the book. All right, Chapter 1. Duncan Johnson unlatched the kitchen window and shoved it open. The cool breeze brought physical comfort but did nothing to ease his mind. Seconds earlier, he had opened a small white envelope and discovered his fate. You will die and you know why. The message appeared to have been assembled with clippings from magazines and newspapers. Each letter had a different font, color, style, and background neatly glued to the page. His nose twitched at the spicy scent that radiated from the note. It was a perfume that was familiar but hard to recollect. The page slipped from his sweaty fingers and fell into the pile of mail beneath him on the marble counter. Who was this mystery lady, and why would she want him dead? Closing his eyes, he recalled a collection of perfume on his wife's vanity. Nikki changed scents as often as she changed a tire, which was several times a day. But she was no killer, and his wife was the last person he wanted to suspect. But after what had happened during the previous month, he began to wonder if this could be her way of paying him back for the pain he had caused. Is Duncan here? Duncan heard the woman's voice echoing from the living room in his office 2 rooms over. He stood up from the desk, abandoning his computer to see who was at the front door. And who are you? Nikki asked the lady. Are you Nikki? Marie. How did she find out where he lived? Duncan rushed down the hallway with hopes that he would be able to explain everything to Nikki, but it was too late. Marie was already filling her ears with what he should have told her about 3 years earlier. I know Duncan probably didn't tell you about me, she went on, but my name is Marie, his baby's mother. Nikki looked back and forth between the lady and small child. "Excuse me?" Duncan stood quietly behind Nikki in the doorway frame of the hallway. "That can't be possible," Nikki said. "Duncan doesn't have any children. Maybe not to your knowledge." "Well, how old is she?" Marie adjusted the toddler on her hip and smiled down into the baby's face. "Dimitri had just turned 3. "What are you doing here, Duncan slowly stepped out of the shadows. Marie looked at Duncan with a twisted lip. "What am I doing here? I shouldn't have to play detective to get you to see your daughter." She stepped forward and shoved the little girl into Duncan's arms. "Her name is Demetria, in case you forgot." Duncan looked at Nikki and tried to push the child back at Marie. But Nikki avoided eye contact with him. As the pain in her eyes grew, he felt compelled to make up some kind of excuse for the situation, something that made sense. "I expect that you'll be taking her shopping since you haven't tried to do anything for her before." Duncan bit his lip to keep from saying something he would regret. He wanted to follow Marie outside, yank her shoulders, and tell her to stay away from his home and his family, but it was his wife he needed to console. Nikki grabbed the golden door handle. "It was nice meeting you, Marie. Duncan will be calling you later on." Marie parted her thin lips, but Nikki slammed the door in her face. Nikki stormed away as the baby wailed in his ear. Duncan looked at his stepson helplessly. "Can you take her for me?" Rashad rose from the couch and took the crying child from Duncan's grasp. "Nikki." He sprinted upstairs to catch up with her, but she pressed forward toward the bedroom. "Don't even," she warned. Duncan tripped over a step and fell. Pain shot through his knee. "Let me explain." He stood back up and heard the bedroom door slam shut. By the time he made it to the room, Nikki had already locked the door. He knocked. "Please let me in and at least hear me out." "That baby is only 3 years old, Duncan," she cried from the other side of the door. "Baby, I'm sorry. She's someone of my past, and I didn't know how to tell you." Silence. "Baby, come on. I'll do anything to make this up to you." When Nikki didn't say anything else, he threw his head back. He dreaded this day and cursed himself for being so careless. How did Marie find out where he stayed in the first place? Their community was gated. Who let her in and why? "And you will be sleeping somewhere else tonight," Nikki added. "One of the guest rooms, on the couch. Go sleep with Marie. But you won't be sleeping in bed with me." The more Duncan thought about the death threat, the more he realized that Marie had to be the one behind this nonsense. But was it something he really needed to be concerned about? And I'll leave it there.
Oh, that's good. Oh, that's juicy. My goodness. Well, what inspired this story?
Even though, it's not based off of anything that I went through personally, it was almost kind of like a fantasy that inspired it, the thought of being a Nikki, this woman who lived a life of luxury. You know, Nikki in the story, she's a housewife. She loves to cook, you know, and she has her garden, and she loves to take care of the household and, you know, but still live a life of luxury. And then there were also a couple of other things that inspired me to write it, but this book is a mystery. It's a mystery novel. And, you know, there's a lot of surprises throughout. And if I were to tell you what other things inspired me to write it, it would kind of give away the story.
Okay, so this is your first mystery. Will you be writing a sequel to it?
The way it ended, it leaves it open to a sequel. But I haven't decided yet. I haven't decided if I'm going to do a sequel yet. Still thinking about it.
Before the show, we were talking about writing, and you said you were writing on your next book. You said that you were having, that it hadn't really come together yet. So you've just been writing notes, because I don't like to discuss things when I'm writing it either. I just wait till I'm through. But I was telling you that's part of the process. A lot of times it's got to be worked out in your subconscious, and then you come to a point of critical mass where the book will just pour out, and you can write it, but you've done your research and, you know, thought about it, and the scenes start coming together. It might be little etch-a-sketch pieces, and then before you know it, you've got a full-fledged novel. How long did it take you to write Darling Nikki?
Believe it or not, it only took me about 30 days to write Darling Nikki, the first draft. And the reason why it didn't take so long is because, like you said, I did a lot of planning initially, you know, before I, you know, decided to even write the first sentence of the book. I planned out how the book was going to work itself out from beginning to end. And I think, you know, I've wrote a couple of books before Darling Nikki, and every other time I would just begin with chapter one and just start writing aimlessly with no direction and just keep writing and writing and writing with, you know, like I said, no direction. But, yeah, I like the way you put it with having all these notes and different things to kind of get your subconscious ready to put everything together when it's time, because that's exactly what I did with Darling Nikki.
Yes, and then I think you made another point. You know, there are two schools of thought. Some people are pro-outlining and some are against it. And I found with L.A. Blues 2, it was easier for me because I did the research and had been thinking about it and, you know, done a lot of little things. But I actually used the hero's journey, which you can find online, and I've been teaching more and more writers to use it, and because they say all great stories and all great movies, all the blockbusters use the hero's journey. You know, it's different variations. I get different email from Britain where they point out different points of it and different facets of the hero's journey. But we've been, I think Joseph Campbell, he started it where he said we've been telling the same story over and over, and it's generally about the hero goes on a journey, and he goes through trials and tribulations. I mean, we can go to The Wizard of Oz, The Titanic, and they come back, they become a changed person after they go through this. I mean, that's even like The Odyssey or Ulysses, and so this is, I think, for me, I found that it is better when you outline, but you still leave a lot of room for surprise and things you didn't know that were, let the characters start taking on their own life and do what they want. But an outline keeps you from, like I had a lot of things I wrote when I was younger that never went anywhere after the first scene because I didn't think it through and didn't plan it out. So planning is good. It can really help, you know, and then still have room for your creativity. You don't have to just have it totally, you know, stick to the T of the outline, but certain stages, certain plot points, meaning where your scene changes, where the plot changes totally on its heel, gone in a whole different direction. You know, I mean, from a reversal of from life to death is the biggest reversal, but it could be a reversal as much as a person having money to having no money. And I like what you said, that she was putting something at risk. I always tell writers as a content editor, it's the first thing I ask them, what is at stake and what is at risk, and how can you raise these risks? And if people have to make a choice between two evils, you know, it's real easy to make a choice between two goods, but what is the choice between two evils? And the greatest one I always say was Sophie's Choice, how she had to choose between her son and daughter which one would go into the concentration camp. I mean, go into the oven. So that is the ultimate choice, you know, and that's when you really put tension in the reader, where you can make them see the that this isn't just something, it doesn't matter if they eat an ice cream or not, but something that's life-threatening, something that, something is hinging, either their source of income, their, how they're going to take care of their family. It should be something that puts the reader on edge because you put something at risk. And I like how you're saying that she stands to lose her money in this lifestyle she has. That's good. And there are a lot of good reads out there, Evie, but how does Darling Nikki differ from the books that are out there? Well, how do you think it differs?
I think it's something new. in the regard that it's, one, not only a mystery that just full of surprises all throughout. Even at the end, there's a couple of little surprises that come about. But I think what's different is probably even the way I wrote it. If, you know, you're familiar with the movie Pulp Fiction, it was the movie itself.
That? Could you repeat that if you're familiar with what?
The movie Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction. So you told it out of order.
Exactly.
And
I told it out of order.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And even that one uses the hero's journey. I have a book, you know. I can't think of it. It's by the guy from Hollywood that has redone the whole hero's myth. I can't think of it. But he was even showing how they use the hero's journey in Pulp Fiction.
I think I need to get that.
Yeah, let me see. Let me look. I have my bookshelf right here. Let me see if I took the book with me to the hotel. I just pulled some of those books out that I had. Oh, boy. What's his name? But anyhow, just go ahead and tell the readers about your book. It's coming out tomorrow, right?
Yes, it comes out tomorrow.
And are you doing any book signings? Where are your books available at?
The book will be available everywhere online that I'm aware of, like as far as like Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, BooksAMillion.com. Also, it'll be available in many different stores, you know, but I know for sure it'll be available online. As far as book signings, I do have a couple of events already set up. I'm supposed to be having a signing this weekend here in Jackson, Mississippi. And then I know that I'll be attending the South Carolina. It's a book festival in South Carolina in May that I'll be attending with other Strayboar authors such as Zane and Charmaine Parker. Who else? Allison Hobbs. The four of us are going to be there. And what else? Then also I'm going to be visiting a bookstore in Philadelphia, but it hadn't been set up all the way. But, yeah, I'm still getting all of that in the works.
Do you have a website?
I do. The website is the name, evadams.com.
Okay.
And I'm also on Facebook, Twitter. Yeah.
How would listeners find you on Facebook?
E.V.Adams. They could just do a search. Or if they want the URL, is facebook.com/EVAdams777. Yeah.
Okay, I found the book. It's The Writer's Journey, the second edition, Mythic Structure for Writers, Christopher Vogler. And he's the one who does this class out of Hollywood. And he, you know, they have readers that read the different stories for the screenplays that come in. And it was in his book he broke down Pulp Fiction, even though they bent time, and he was saying that was just kind of showing how modern times, you know, that the speed of life is so fast now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, you know, the movie jumps all over. I mean, at one point you see John Travolta shot, then the next scene he's back, you know.
Exactly. It can be real confusing the first time you watch it.
Right. And here it is, Quentin Tarantino, The Postmodern Mirror. Young people may have responded to Pulp Fiction because it reflects the postmodern artistic sensibility they grew up with. Postmodernism is the result of a world blown apart, fragmented into millions of pieces by a century of war, social disruption, and rapid technological change. The doors of perception have been shattered by machines and the frantic pace of electronification. I know it's different for young people growing up with, you know, with the Internet. I mean, now they say that even it's hard to market to teenagers to come to the mall because they like to congregate on Facebook. And they like to spend $600 to $700 on an iPhone or, you know, an app versus the way the earlier generations liked the expensive gym shoes.
Mm-hmm.
It's truly something different. Well, that's good. I didn't get a chance to read your book, but I want to wait till you send me the other copy.
Yeah, the other version. I'd rather you read that version anyway.
Okay, great. Well, let me see if we have any emails. Did we get any emails yet?
Yeah, we have one right here. This is...
Okay, well, that person, you're the winner. Ding, 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 ding. You're kidding.
All right, I'll let them know.
Yeah, okay, go ahead. What's the email?
All right, this says, being that you are a young writer, do you see yourself keeping this up as you grow older? Do you think your age will affect your writing content? And they just signed it as young writer in Seattle. So, I don't know. No name, just young writer.
That's a good question. What do you think?
I definitely believe my writing's going to change as I get older, because I'm all for improving my craft. You know, I don't believe that, you know, I'm just in the beginning. I'm just a baby, you know, and there's so much for me to learn. So, you know, as I learn, I'm hoping that with each book, the readers will see an improvement in my writing, you know, with the techniques that I use and, you know, the way I work with words, and even, you know, the different type of stories that I come up with. You know, Darling Nikki was something that I came up with when I was like, what, 22 maybe? And even as a 27-year-old, I probably would not have written Darling Nikki, because my mind is in a different place right now. So, yeah, as I get older, I definitely see me writing more, you know, deeper things. Just, yeah.
All right. Well, I'll let you know if we receive any more emails. Thank you.
Okay. Make sure that person sends in their address so they can get a free copy of the book. They can either send it to dj@artistfirst.com or send it to maxtoe@aol.com. And I'll make sure that Evie gets the address so she can send you a book.
All right. Cool. Thank you.
Okay. Well, what is your favorite part about being an author?
The fact that I'm able to create, you know, it's like you're being a little, you know, creator. You're able to create people, scenes, situations, and just, you know, let your imagination just go with it. That's my favorite part. It's just kind of like an outlet.
You know what? I admire that you have written something at such a young age. So you still got long, you got a lot of places to go. And I was trying to write at your age. And at that point, I was learning so many new things as a social worker. And I was a young mother, had a couple of kids and a husband. And it was just too many stimuli. But I look back, what I had in my mind was so crazy. I'm glad I did. And now I can go back and capture that sense of possessiveness that I had for people and for my loved ones, and trying to hold everybody tight and being, you know, just a person who... So I'm so happy that I'm more detached as a human being, in terms of that I can step outside of myself and write about things that are not related to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like right now I'm writing about someone that's younger, and I'm writing about someone who was raised in foster care and someone that's a detective. You know, I had a very similar background in terms of I did a lot of detective work as a social worker, because I would have to find abandoned children's parents. And I could find, if you were anywhere within a vicinity, I could find you. All you had to do was abandon your kid and leave it where I could find you. I would find you. So I learned a lot of how to find people through my past job. But I'm finding that some writers never grow beyond writing about themselves. My early two books are kind of autobiographical, but a lot of my stories, my short stories, were always inspired by different clients I met. And I'm so glad that I've had a job that made me meet people from different cross-sections of life. And some of the editors that I met before I became an agent that came to Black Writers on Tour would say, I want to tell these writers, this writer that might have been one of the New York Times bestsellers or Essence bestsellers, that they need to go back to work because their books are getting boring, they're sentenced. I mean, they're not exposed to enough people. So you do have to be around people to get ideas. You have to immerse yourself in life. It doesn't have to necessarily be a job, but you cannot just sit up in an attic the way that was kind of a myth of writers, that that's the writing life, was to shut yourself off and just be with the muse. That's a good way to, that's a good prescription for going crazy. You need to get around people. I actually wrote two books while I was working 70-hour weeks. And I've written fewer novels because I've been, you know, dealing with other writers over the last 12 years as an agent and as an editor. But I'm getting back to my writing now, and I'm glad because I know some writers that everything they write, you know, it comes directly from their life. And I like writers that can step inside somebody else's life and imagine this life and show what it is to be a human, you know, especially to be a human in time. We're living in very critical times. Now, the Bible spoke of that, you know, not to get into my preaching soapbox. But I want to see that in the writing, the critical times we're living in. I've seen people on TV now, on the news, that are robbing banks that were used to work on Wall Street. You know, we're living in where people, where they're at the edge, and that's the best characters to write about, are writers, are characters on the edge, where they might do anything. And you should not, and you know, we act like the Ten Commandments was written for somebody else. They were written for us because we're capable. Under given the right circumstances, I believe almost anybody could do some very dangerous crimes that they wouldn't have done had they not been up against a wall. So, you know, those are the things I think I'd like to see for younger writers, to see that growth, their understanding of human nature a little bit more. Because what I pick up in a lot of the younger writers that I've worked with as an editor is that their concern is very physical. And so was mine when I was young. My concern was physical. I mean, sex is always like the first thing on the brain. And, you know, they can't hardly get past almost no story because of so much sex. And story is always going to be around. I always tell people, go for story. Don't just go for the sex. You know, you can have sex scenes, but you don't have to overdo it.
I agree. And even Zane, she's even said herself that when she writes her books, you know, she's known for erotica. But right. She says even when she writes her books, she does the sex scenes last, you know, because she's focused on the story, the actual, you know, plot, not just the physical, like you say.
And, you know, sex has its place, but I think some of the best sex scenes, the most memorable ones to me from literature, are the ones that you have to bring your imagination. It's the biggest room in the world, and it's called imagination, where you leave something to the imagination. When I read some of these young writers' sex scenes, it's like my jaw is sitting up, what the? Do people even do stuff like this? You know, and maybe because I'm from a different generation, but it's like there's no holds barred. What the heck is? Come on, yeah. You know, let something be secret. I remember an older woman once told me, Whitney used to even be a lot more puter than my generation, but she said, oh, no, you can't be too common with your husband. You know, meaning that you should even have your clothes.
Wow.
And I don't think that you have to go to that extreme, but leave some mystery. There's no mystery. What is your feeling about that?
I agree with you totally. As a matter of fact, it's been a goal of mine not to have sex in my books. There are adult themes in the book. You know, I don't just say that my books can be read by children, but like you say, leave something to the imagination, and I feel like sex is not, for my books, I don't feel like sex is necessary for the story because I'm trying to tell you a story. So I agree with you. Now, Matter of fact, I haven't even read any books lately on with too much sex in it, even though I see a lot of it out there.
You were saying you haven't read any books. Could you repeat that?
Yeah, I said I haven't read too many books like that, even though I know there's a lot out there. I'm more into, like, contemporary fiction, so that's the direction I'm really headed in, you know, more contemporary.
Yes. Where do you see yourself in 5 to 10 years?
5 to 10 years? That's a good question. On somebody's bestseller list, and with if we're talking 5 to 10 years, I hope to have about 5 to 10 more books out. That's where I see myself.
That's good. You know, you set the goal. I book review as well, and I'm looking at some of the books that are, you know, that they sent me. It came from HarperCollins for book reviews, and they're all New York Times best-selling authors. And some of the things I picked up is that they've got a good sense of pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
They also have good vocabulary. It's not a lot of sex. And they also have built an audience. And I think that's one of the keys to getting on New York Times, that you have to have a kind of big audience.
Okay, that's the recipe to being on the New York Times best-selling list.
and read a lot. You got to be a wide reader. What are some of the books you like to read?
Lately I've been reading a lot of self-help and nonfiction type books. When I write, I like to read books on writing, like that book that you just told us about. Matter of fact, I was just looking it up on Amazon.
Okay.
It's called The Writer's Journey by Christopher.
Yes.
Yeah. But, yeah, I read a lot on writing.
Because,
like
good.
I said, I'm trying to improve my craft. But fiction-wise, I haven't read a lot of fiction, you know, in the past couple of years. But the last few that I did read were by Terry McMillan, They Laid a Dollar Short. I love Mary Monroe, Toni Morrison. And
do you read books by other races?
Good question. Nonfiction, I have. Nonfiction, you know, with these writing books on writing, but fiction, the last book I read was like a Harlequin romance novel, and that was some years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at some of the ones I just brought back from the hotel I stayed in for 2 months. One is Ann Patchett's State of Wonder, and she's a Pulitzer Prize winning writer, I believe. I know her Bel Canto. I love that one. Then I got Sue Grafton, because when I start writing mystery minds, I call them urban thrillers. And this is her U is for Undertow. And let me see, I'm just trying to look at some of the books I have by other races. I have The Marshall Plan for novel writing. I've had that one a long time. Missing Persons, you know, how, because I had a kidnapping in my last book. So I wanted to, you know, look at some of the ways that you would find a missing person. And one of my books I love that I pulled it back out. I had been working with it about 5 or 10 years ago. And I had stopped using it, and I bought a copy last summer, The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. That teaches you how to journal and write 3 morning pages every day. And it helps you get rid of your stuff, things that keep you from writing, you know. Oh, I got the flu today, and my nose was running. Just, you know, all the little crazy, mundane things that keep us from getting, you know, a lot of times it can be bitterness, anger. And anger is just a call to action. when you get angry about something, it doesn't mean you need to do something different. But this is a good book, too, and it's A Spiritual Path to Higher Creativity, Julia Cameron, The Artist's Way. And then she's got several spinoffs from it now. But I started back doing that, and I noticed that this book did flow better. I was able to just get out. I mean, I just got pages of rambling of things that I needed to get out the way to be able to move on. And so that, I think that helps, too. Do you keep a journal as a writer?
I don't. I'm not committed enough. And I probably shouldn't even say that to other writers, but I'll start a journal. My first couple of entries will be pages long, you know, like, but then I just fall off because I don't know. I'm not interested in really recording my own thoughts all the time, you know. Not big on the journal writing.
Yeah, well, sometimes it can just be list writing. I use lists for, as one of my writing exercises. When I teach writing classes, I use lists where people can put unlike things together and develop a story around it, and it also has them come up with fresh imagery that'll come from different lists when you're, you know, just crossing things, and be surprised how many jump starts the stories you can get from lists. So that's
I like that idea. Yeah, different little writing exercises that kind of warm you up. I like that.
Yeah, you have to do a lot of things as a writer that can keep you going. Well, do you think that, you don't know your next project, so what is your least favorite part about being an author?
Not when it doesn't flow easily. Like, Darling Nikki, it just poured out of me. It poured. And I have yet to work on a project since then. And it's been years, but I have yet to work on a project since then that it just poured out like that. And, but then again, I have been reading things from other writers that say, especially full-time writers that say, you can't just write when you're motivated. You have to find ways to move past that block and move past that lack of motivation to force yourself to write anyway. And I'm trying to learn how to do that.
Yes, that's good. My LA Times, I was reading different book reviews that, and they have some really good book reviews on the Sunday section of LA Times. And this writer, he's kind of a famous writer. It had writer's block. And so his book is short, and he put it out as an e-book. But, you know, and then he had went through grief, losing a sister unexpectedly, and some other things that inspired him. But I didn't realize how, for some people, writer's block is just such a, you know, agonizing thing and I think if you stay busy, because everything doesn't have to be a novel. You can write short stories, you can write blogs. I started writing nonfiction during the years I didn't write a novel. I started writing a column, and then later that turned to a blog. And also I've written 5 nonfiction books. And one, I'm getting ready to divide it into 3 and put those up as 3 different e-books as part of a series of the Hush Hush Secrets of blah, 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 you know, that type of thing. And the first one is going to be Creating a Life You Love, talking about my career change at later life. And I think we think of writing as being just a novel, but you can write. You know, I'd like you to talk a little bit about, because I thought that was interesting, what you told me about what you do on the side, if you're willing to share it, you know. So that writers can know they can make money as a writer. I make most of my money as a content editor and as a ghostwriter. Mm-hmm. I make far more than I make as an agent, because as an agent, I only get 15%. And, you know, right now, the industry is in flux, so it's not like everybody just run. People who used to get 6 figures aren't even getting 6 figures.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be flexible, and there are so many ways you can make money as a writer. So let's talk about the one that you do.
Well, my day job, I am an executive resume writer, and basically, it's resume writing on a totally different level. It's a form of career marketing where you're tailoring the resume specifically to the position that the client is seeking to apply for. And I've been doing it now for about 3 years. And at first, it started off as a part-time thing. But then, you know, the economy is a little shaky. So I ended up seeing that there was a high demand for people who were willing to hire a person to do their resume for them. And it turned into a business, and it's a web-based business that I established about 3 years ago. And I used to have to advertise for it, but then I generated so much business that now I don't have to advertise. Now I don't have the website. I just do everything based off referrals now.
It's wonderful when you don't have to be, when you get off the begging, that's a good thing. The best business in the world is referral business, and the best word of mouth is the best form of advertising, where you don't have to, you know, I used to be running behind people and all that when I started. What I found is if you do good work and you over-deliver always, deliver more than you promise. Don't over-promise and under-deliver. Under-promise and over-deliver, you'll never be broke. And if you do what you love and writing, who says that you have to just be writing your novel 24-7? You don't have nothing to talk about 24-7 if you're just sitting around writing. Some of the most boring books I'm seeing are from full-time writers. We're living full lives out there. You know, we got to get away from the myth of thinking that we need to be just sitting around writing a book. It don't take all day to write no novel. Mm-hmm. I got one writer sit down and write her novel in a week. Now, see how many, and the faster you write, generally the better you write, because you're not second-guessing your every word.
Mm-hmm.
My last book, I wrote it in 6 weeks, but I had been researching for years, so it really was a lot of little stuff sitting in that critical mass in my subconscious waiting. And I'm going to try to get down to 2 to 4 weeks, you know, because when I hear about people, it took them 10 years and the book don't even be that long.
No.
I think the time we get caught up in this thought process where we get just so intellectual. And then you also read about a whole lot of these so-called brilliant writers in the mental hospital. You know, it's a certain amount of not thinking, overthinking things. And most writers, we tend to overthink it. That's what makes us a writer. You know, most people, they just go through life and they miss half the stuff that's going on. And they're much happier than writers. Writers are not just, we're not happy because we see everything. We absorb everything. We feel deeper than most people. And that's normal to be a writer. But also, lighten up. I like the book. There's certain nonfiction books that I love. One is Don't Sweat the Small Stuff. It's all small stuff. And, you know, because I could go from A to Z and imagining all this horrible stuff when I was younger. You know, oh, this could happen, that could happen. Now I have what I call a plan A and a plan B, and I always think, okay, in the worst case scenario, this might happen, and I'm going to still be okay if I'm alive. As long as you got your health and strength, you can make it. And we get so caught up on thinking that to be a writer that we're going to have a red carpet rolled out. If that's what you're doing it for, then you're doing it for the wrong reason.
For the wrong reason.
Love of it. What is your feelings about that, Evie?
I agree 100%. You have to have a passion for it. You have to just enjoy wanting to do it. You have to love it when you're not getting paid, you know.
Right.
Darling Nikki, I wrote that years ago with no intentions on getting paid, you know. I mean, of course, yeah, I wanted to get it published, but that wasn't my motivation. And when you were just talking about the full-time authors who you'll read their book, and sometimes their book, some of their books may be, you know, a little bit more boring than others.
Oh, they're not like their last book because they're not stretching, they're not out around people absorbing life.
Yeah.
So That's the other thing that can happen. So, you know, instead of saying, oh, I hate that I'm working, that's keeping me from writing, use your job to help you come up with ideas.
Mm-hmm.
I had more ideas when I was had the 70-hour work week because I was coming in contact with a lot of people. And now I make myself get out so that I can do something. I always have more than I can do on my plate to do, but like last night I was on this program for Black History at a small church, and I'm glad I went. And then I went to my writer's group Saturday, and I missed the African American Film Festival last weekend when it was here. But, you know, go to all the free film festivals, the book festivals, even if you work at home. And with you working at home, how do you manage your time so that you don't work 7 days a week? That's the other challenge I have found.
Well, first I had to work 7 days a week and go crazy to realize that that's not how it's supposed to be done, because I literally almost had a breakdown. I was working so hard. But, yeah, you do have to find a perfect balance. The balance that I'm trying to find now is, how am I writing for a living doing these resumes, which may not seem like a lot to some people, but it's a very stressful job. Mm-hmm. And then get off work and then write work on my book. You know,
I'm going to tell you a secret that one of the writers told me that, and I can give her a name. I don't think she'll mind me sharing this because I was proud of her, that she was doing this, Joy Lynn Jossel. Well, she writes Christian fiction. She had did 5 books in about within a year and something.
Wow.
This church series that she does. It's under E.N. Joy, Enjoy. So I said, well, how do you do it? Because she's also over the Christian urban line, and so she has to, you know, she's the acquiring editor, and she used to edit for people, and she still has a growing family. And so I said, she said she gets up and work on her stuff first. You pay yourself first for 2 hours. So I try, even if I'm just doing my 3 morning pages, I shifted just in that, and I saw that now I've got another book coming out. I had one come out in July and having one come out in May because I took time for me. So you just have to get up and pay. And I did that when I worked on the job. I used to get up and work right on my book before I got up and went out. And then I wrote on my lunch break, and I kept notes inside of my clients' files and ideas. And I'm a great eavesdropper. And people, what come out of people's mouths are some of the best lines for stories.
Yes, they are. Yeah, they are.
I read this famous book. I can't remember, but this man was at a dinner party, and this man's wife had choked, and the husband just looked on and didn't help. And that became the basis of a really great novel. So, you know, you have to always be kind of got your snifters up and looking for ideas. Ideas are everywhere. But that's how she did it. And just that piece of advice she gave me shifted my thing where I wasn't, because really a lot of times you have your juice time. And if you give your juice time to everybody else, then you don't have it for you. So you need to get your juice time to you, and you still give your clients good. But you can't put all your best in them, and then you have nothing left for you.
You're right about that. So I need to wake up a couple hours earlier, go to sleep a couple hours earlier, and wake up a couple hours earlier.
Yeah, and do your writing, because when I found out how she was getting her books published, and she had gone through a period where she felt like she was doing everybody else's and not hers, and her husband said something, so she did it. And I see that she's done a lot of the little e-books as well, and that's how you do it. Just when you're doing other things and you're an editor and you're already in this field, or like in your case, writing the resumes, and that takes, you know, as you say, research, thinking, and I ghostwrite for people, and I have to come up with their outline. I say, look, you're borrowing my brain for this. And now you're sitting up here renting space up in my head. I got to write my own books, too. So I fell behind on this, but I feel better. A lot of people got mad. So when you look out for you, but everybody on this planet is on this station called What's in It for Me?
And yep.
It's all right. You know, that's what businesses have run on. You find what's in it for this other person, and you provide that need for them. That's all great. But when you don't provide for your own, it's almost like doing abuse to the muse and to yourself. when you're a creative person and a writer and you don't write your book, and I always, that's almost one of my sales pitches to people that I convince to tell their story, even if they're not writers, but that they have at least one good book in them. And I write a lot of memoirs for older people now, and I tell them we all have a story to tell. We all have contributed to this American dream and this American story. And if you don't write it down, there was a motto on my old job, if you don't write it down, it didn't happen. And I always say, if you don't write your story down, and that's what happened to African Americans. And, you know, just as I was listening to all the things at the Black History Program that we created and this and that, you don't write it down, not only did it didn't happen, you didn't happen. You know, because nobody, like they say in the Fox, in the forest, when there's who's going to tell the story? They're not going to sit and tell the story for you, the hunter. They're going to tell the story from the hunter's point of view. So if you're the hunted, you have to tell your story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's your parting words of advice for aspiring writers?
Aspiring writers, keep writing, but study the art of writing, and, you know, also editing. You know, don't think that your story is just so good as is that you're not going to need a professional editor, because even the best writers in the world have to hire professional editors, sometimes three and four of them. So, and also not to give up on their dreams, because I almost gave up on my dream. Darling Nikki sat in a closet for about 3 years before I decided to take it out, dust it off, and send it off to more agents. And as soon as I sent it off, I got finally some agents that were interested in at least reading it, and then eventually signed on to one.
Right, and see, that's what you have to do. What was the defining moment that made you pull your baby out of the closet and the world and get the legs on it?
Talking about it with somebody, discussing our passions in life and telling them my passion was writing, even though I hadn't written in a couple of years, and they were like, well, you should write a book. I was like, I already have, and they wanted to read it, so I let them read it, and while they were reading it, I read it as well, and I was like, this is a good book. I don't know why I gave up on it, and from there, you know, less than a month later, there were a couple of agents who were interested in it, so.
I am really happy for you that your book is out, and, you know, I wish you all the best, and please come back on the show when you have a new book and give out your email and contact information one more time.
My email address is evadams777@yahoo.com. And again, you can find me on Facebook. You can just search E.V. Adams on Facebook. Same thing with Twitter. A lot of times my handle is EVAdams777, whether it's on Facebook, Twitter, email. Just put the 777 behind it, and you can find me almost anywhere.
Okay, well, thanks again. Evie Adams, author of Darling Nikki, which will hit the stands tomorrow, so please go out and check out the book. It really sounds interesting. I like what I've heard, so I can't wait to get my better copy, because this advanced copy seems kind of...
Yeah, it's a little different. I did make some last-minute changes. Okay. And also wanted to thank you, Dr. Maxine Thompson, for having me on your show. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. And this show, I didn't realize you were so young, so you got a long way. You're doing for your age. And then the fact that you understand that it's a craft, and there are a lot of good books out there that you can read. I have almost two shelves of just books I'm writing.
Yeah, I need to get on your shelf and figure out what I need to, my next few books I need to buy.
All right, you can get them from writing to sale. I'm just looking at some of them that I have, writing screenplays. And they're just, I mean, some books I have are just on one aspect.
Characters.
You know, as writers, this is a lifelong education. Always commit yourself to lifelong learning, and you'll be a great author, because all you have to do is follow some of your curiosities, and what if, and boom, you can have a great story. You might write the next great American novel from that.
I'm right about that.
Okay, well, we will. Please return next week. I haven't set up a guest for next week, but I'm sure we'll have one. And this show will be archived. Have a great week. Love you all.